I'm going to open it up for anyone from the legislature to make any comments or ask any questions.
Thank you. I have one major concern. In the economic impact analysis, you state that with the opening of Great Wolf, that the market will shift and the existing hotels will see decline in business. And then you say after a few years, that'll pick up again. My concern is that within those first few years, Greene County exists largely on family-owned hotels and attractions. And the areas that you said that have been successful with Great Wolf Lodges have large commercial industrial type attractions and hotels. What will happen with the family-owned attractions and hotels in the area? And then after a few years, you said that would pick up again. However, in 4 years, you intend to possibly build 200 more rooms. So how would that impact all the hotels and attractions that are existing now that have been around for generations?
I think the best way to address this is to field the question and to provide a response. Go back and really look into the question and be very specific about how this will impact. I think in the market study, just to indicate how I read that, there's an indication there that within the market there are some properties that aren't performing at a high level, haven't been reinvested and so forth. And certainly with the shock of new rooms in the marketplace, there will be people looking to book rooms at the new facility who may traditionally be booking elsewhere. That's a short-term blip. It's tantamount to rebuilding your main highway. When all the small businesses on that highway during this period of change experience some little bit of loss of business, but anticipate with the improvements that are made on that road, new business will come. So I will certainly respond to that. We will get you a formal response to the question, how will it impact family-owned properties, and really interpreting what that means in the study.
A couple things, Patty. One is David Sangaree, who was the author of the report, specifically wasn't invited tonight because the report's large. And I would be a fool to think that any of you could read that in a couple days, have all your intelligent questions and answers together. So anybody in the room and anybody that's read the report, I would strongly encourage to read the report thoroughly, assimilate your questions, and we will either respond ourselves or we'll make available for a conference call. But I also want to make just one general observation, I think, in this county, you know, because I think the fear is talked about resorts closing. I'm 25 years working in this county in the public sector. In the last 5 years alone, I can name, you know, Furlong's has gone out, the Ferncliff was sold to religious groups, the Briar Tuck has gone. We have been on a steady decline for a very long time. Some people like yourselves, the Kerrigans to their credit, have reinvested in the properties. Gary Nicholson is here in the audience. There's been some exceptions here in the county. But on a day-to-day basis, if this Great Wolf was not on the table, was not a proposal right now, I've heard the argument made for a very long time that there's not enough attractions and we're not drawing enough people here in general to support the hotel and the resort industry we used to have. And while, you know, that's regrettable, I think we just have to keep that in that context. Friar Tuck, Lang's Grosside just went up, you know, for foreclosure and closed. So there's like five of them right there in the last 4 or 5 years, I guess. And unfortunately, I bet there's some in the room that, you know, already know that it's a struggle every day themselves. So I guess we would subscribe, and I think I do personally, and I think the report backs that up, that bringing several hundred thousand new people here to the county will have a positive effect overall. And I would hope that we would find a way together to work as a community. And I know the commitment of the IDA will be not just to build this thing and run, but to figure out how we get people off the property. What Melissa didn't talk about was the shuttle buses that they do out of the Poconos to local, you know, to local hotels and other things like that, okay? But we will make the opportunity for all legislators, either in a conference call situation, given a week or two for you to have time to look at that study very thoroughly. There's like 300 and some pages here, so that Sangaree himself can be put these questions right to him directly.
Thank you.
I got a question for Nikki.
Sure.
You mentioned some occupancy rates.
I hear you. name's Keith Valentine from the legislature. Nikki, you mentioned some occupancy rates and trending between 2007 and 2010.
Yes.
If you would just please repeat them, the one by a little quick. I know occupancy is an area that the legislature has to use as a consideration for our revenue generation.
Sure.
Yeah, thanks for your question. The question related to occupancy trends both at Great Wolf and throughout the industry. And I provided some comparative statistics citing Great Wolf's Generation 2 resorts between 2007 and 2010, which ranged in occupancy at around 65 up to 67%. 07 specifically was 65% system-wide and 64% in 2010, so tremendously consistent. The most local resort that a number of speakers have spoken about, the Poconos Resort, is currently trending at around 78% year-to-date. Very strong occupancy, and that's why Melissa said that we like this marketplace so much, because you've got the strength of a large number of families with young children who would be attracted to something like this. For comparative purposes, I also provided some statistics in the U.S. lodging industry as a whole. During the same period, the occupancy ranged from 63% in 07 down to 58% in 2010. So therefore, that was the basis upon which I said that Great Wolf is outperforming the overall trend and number in the marketplace. I also had statistics for the Albany lodging sector, which includes this area. It's a regional statistic. And that trended from 61% in 07 down to 56% in 2010, including at a declining average daily rate of $97 down to $91 per night on average.
Thank you.
Your plane just landed.
I just want to introduce the final member of our team who was able just arrived from the airport. And the type of financing that we talked about here is often known as sort of a story bond financing. Well, here's a guy who knows how to weave that story, Jeff Hyman from Guggenheim Partners, who will be responsible for the debt for the project. So I just wanted to introduce and acknowledge Jeff for being here. Thank you.
Pleased to be here, and sorry I'm running a little behind, but if there's anything that I need to address, you can guide me accordingly, George. Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks.
Go.
Thank you. Joe Izzo, county legislator for the town of Catskill. I used to be the supervisor. Sometimes it's hard, you know, to give up that role. As other supervisor will note, I have a couple of questions, and they deal one, and obviously you probably won't be able to answer them now. What hold harmless agreement would be in place in case of early problems with the project? Obviously, if everything is signed, the financing goes through, and then there's a problem, a financial problem with the project, the county is going to be committed to a bond for a 30-year period, and I'm concerned about if the project does not go forward, what will be the hold harmless provisions of the agreement. Again, out of 100%, what is the percentage of feasibility to succeed over the near term of the project 5 to 10 years? In other words, is it 50%, is it 60%? Is there a 60% chance to succeed and a 40% chance to fail? I'd kind of like to know that. Could there have been or will there be other participants in the project, that is New York State or federal governments? Could the project go forward without the county financing the infrastructure? Will an independent water and sewer district be formed? If so, what will be the boundaries? And will the village of Catskill have a role, a village of Coxsackie have a role in that project? I think the mayor's already pretty much answered that one. Will the infrastructure work be done in conjunction with the building of the water park, or will it be independent of each other? Will you do the infrastructure first, then the water park will be done at the same time? Who will own the wastewater treatment system, the septic system, and be responsible for maintenance and daily operations? Will the county own the system and be responsible for the operations? Will it be just an independent operator? And when the project was first envisioned, who suggested that the county build the infrastructure? The developer, the IDA, or the county? As you know, I'm in my first new term as a legislator, so I was not on the legislature when this project first started. Thank you very much.
I could pick a couple of them.
Thank you, Mr. Rizzo. There's a variety of questions there. There are two that I think I can address, and Paul, there's probably a few you want to touch. Can the project go forward without the infrastructure being built? The answer is no. And the reason we're here is because there's a gap, and the gap needs to be filled. As far as the infrastructure and the project itself, they're designed to be built simultaneously. In fact, the financing is designed to close simultaneously so that we are mutually obligated at the same time. Paul?
Okay, in terms of the, there was a lot you had in your question, Joe, so it's kind of a, it's kind of like a lawyer's question where you have eight questions in a question, so let me see if I can break it down into one. Okay, hold harmless. Okay, that was at least the one I wrote. Pre-issuance of bonds, the way we've envisioned it, you know, again, it's still subject to a definitive agreement, but I can tell you, at least this is my thought process. We're not going to issue any bonds until they have $115 million. It's got to be simultaneous. They're not going to be able to raise the $115 million unless we have, you know, the bonds. So it's going to be a simultaneous closing. So then go forward, construction risk. Okay, so that there, you know, that's your first piece. You're not going to become obligated. So it's kind of like you're not going to get married until you get married. The next question then is the construction risk. You have a, you know, in this case, you've got someone who's going to put up $115 million. They're going to probably require, you know, remember where we were with Athens Gen, it was a similar size project, you know, about half, well, a lot smaller, but they had, you know, a construction guarantee from a large company. So the construction risk would be mitigated by the use of a, what's called a guaranteed maximum price contract from Turner, and would have, you know, their performance bond, so that some insurance company, not just Paul Goldman with a signature, is going to be behind there and say, I'm going to pay for this thing. Okay. Now, once the thing closes, becomes operational, there are no operational guarantees. So again, the other issue is, though, if there was a problem, you know, remember what happened at Athens Gen. They had a problem, the company had a problem. Person with $115 million, being the bank or the equity players, usually steps in and takes care of the problem because they've got $115 million reasons why they need to make this project a success. That's, you know, and we've had this experience in this county. We had that with Athens Gen. And, you know, they were half pregnant when they had a problem and the banks came in and finished it. It's been a success, but that's how that would normally work. In terms of the districts, I may gloss over a few of them, Joe, but you know my numbers, so you can call me. In terms of the districts, we've had some discussions with the county's bond council, okay? So there will be some districts, it looks like it will be a county district. In terms of how it came to pass that this issue became to the county, I think it became kind of a maturation because we don't have the IDA, we don't have $15 million to go out and do this. And you know, if we could do this, you know, just on our own credit, you know, supported by the public infrastructure fees, you know, we've looked at that and we're still going to evaluate that because obviously, you know, if it can be done without the county's guarantee, that would be preferable. But the only, you know, the issue that comes about without the guarantee is the interest rate goes significantly up and then there's less available. And that means then the public PISF would not be available to the county for general revenues, but would be used to pay those bond issues. So those are kind of where we've gone. We've been through the process a lot, and we have not been able to find a source of financing, you know, backed on that without a county, without some type of quasi-county guarantee or a shadow guarantee. And that really brings me back to the point I said in the presentation. We really have to look at this as an investment in infrastructure like we've done before.
With no means trying to diminish the risk faced by the county with these bonds, I think it's appropriate to have the investment bankers who will be looking at the $115 million maybe address how they would approach the same questions.
Sure. What you've touched on to us goes to the heart of some of the risks that we evaluate very early in the process when we have a project come our way. construction risk is a real issue to visit on. We don't think of a project in terms of those probabilities of success or failure. Rather, I would tend to plot these risks onto a spectrum where, you know, colonizing Mars is a high degree of risk. This is way down in the low end of the spectrum. We've got an entity that has built these things before, the last three of them. Although it's an incredibly high quality product, there's somewhat of a cookie cutter nature of the build out. We know exactly what it looks like, how it works. There's not a lot of pioneering going on. That makes me feel good. I have to get comfortable with that very early in the process. So when you start with something that's cookie cutter, it's been done recently, it's been done by the same guys, they're gonna come with a contract that was mentioned before, the GMAX contract. We get real comfortable with construction risk. So it's something that we're very conscious of as well. The second risk that we focus on that you were, I think, touching on as well, and has been hinted here, is that operating risk and what I call sort of the ramp up or stabilization risk. They kind of go hand in hand to a degree, or maybe ramp up and stabilization is a facet of operating risk. Here, we've got the industry leader running these things. That makes me feel good. If Michael told me that, you know, I've got this great idea and I'm gonna rip off Great Wolf's model and run a water park myself, I never would have continued talking to him. This is the way these things work. You get a good local sponsor to bring it together, and then you go out and find, in this case, the best in the business to operate the project. So that makes us feel good. And then lastly, and I think you correctly pointed out, especially in real estate and hospitality, these kind of destination entertainment projects, if you stub your toe a little out of the box, it's sometimes hard to recover from that. And there was never a to my knowledge, and I don't think Great Wolf ever had a faster stabilizing project than the Poconos. And I think the primary reason for that is that, and this is a theme of the HLA study and why we're so enthusiastic about this project. This geographic area is so woefully underserved by this product that there really is no stabilization period. It isn't one of these things where you kind of come out of the box and you have 30%, 40%, people gradually know what's going on. Bang, they got instant stabilization there. I think even a conservative analysis done by HLA says it stabilizes very quickly. So another thing that we visit on that we're very conscious of, as you pointed out, and it's really a 3-for-3 in this regard.
Thank you. Is there anybody else from the legislature that had any questions?
Chris? I'm Chris Feaster, county legislator from the town of Athens. Could you review the process for determining the indirect impact on the county from this project? I was reading the H&L study, and so much of it seems like it's a series of multipliers and a series of assumptions that are made. Is anybody here capable of kind of taking us on that?
We'll have to defer to when you get you on the phone directly with Sandry, but I will tell you this. We really haircutted those, or really was conservative based on national standards over a lot of studies and a lot of analysis.
Can't hear you. Can't hear you.
First of all, as I said to Chris on some of the specific questions with H&L, Chris, so a couple things. One is I want to just repeat again, we did not count on that in anyone in the economic model. So we're clear on that. That's not included in any of the cash flow analysis against debt or any of the rest of that. That's just secondary. Second of all, those things are done by people who like to do that stuff, analysts, and look at ratios, et cetera, just as you said, which are used across the whole nation. I can tell you, and we get Sandra on the phone with you, we had those, this was my big push when we were reviewing the study, to shave them down substantially, okay? Because I also knew that Greene County was gonna maybe take a little time to develop some of these secondary amenities. You know, maybe somebody would get gas in Ravina and not in Coxsackie. and et cetera. So even though you look at what the numbers are in there, we brought those percentages down substantially, as well as did not count on them at all in the economic model, whether the project was a success or not. We just looked at that as all being extra. I think we would all agree it'll have some secondary impact, but we did not count on that to make the budget or request.
You deserve an answer directly from the analyst, but let me just tell you from my own experience. The model used is known as the RIMS model. It's a regional improvement multiplier system. It's been used for 30 or 40 years. It comes from the federal government as a tool to gauge what happens when a dollar is spent. So it takes the direct impacts of our project, the income earned by an employee, the money earned by a business who provides material or supply, and how that money circulates within the economy of both your area, the county, and the region. And it makes certain assumptions about how much stays right here and how much goes to the broader region. But it really reflects the dollar that's earned as a result of the revenue stream produced by this project being reinvested in meals and clothing. And that leads to a certain level of secondary spending that results in the equivalency of a certain amount of jobs being created. So it's really a time-tested model. We haven't overly emphasized it here. We believe the direct benefits alone speak loudly for this project. But it's a time-tested tool to measure secondary impacts. And I think the IDA and the county are very prudent in not overly focusing on those secondary impacts. You'll see them in the form of new businesses, new investment occurring, better proceeds from restaurants, higher sales tax revenues coming in from somewhere. But we will also get you a direct answer from the analyst in terms of how he gets there. The indirect impacts measured by RIMS are really just an economic model. How much new income is coming to the county in the form of payments to businesses and employees, and how is that being re-spent again in the community? The impacts separately, the impacts on other resorts, we've documented by going to five representative resort locations where there are outdoor water parks and other attractions, as well as a new indoor water park, and speaking specifically to the people in those parks, the people who represent the communities or the visitors bureaus in those parks, giving us both anecdotally and quantifiably what benefit they've seen from an overall rise in the attributes of that resort. So those are real life stories. We heard Supervisor O'Rourke indicating that she spoke directly to one of these areas without any prodding on our part. And I think that's probably the best way to independently verify the impacts is by talking to some of these other communities that look a lot like Greene County is gonna look if this project's built.
I'd also like to know the full scale of the tax breaks that are being given to this project. We haven't mentioned mortgage tax or sales tax forgiveness, things like that. And is the IDA going to take this over as a full lease project and float the bonds through the IDA, or is that yet to be determined?
I'll answer that. The request is for the full spectrum of IDA benefits, sales tax, mortgage tax, and the pilot we discussed. In terms of the structure for the bonds, there's been some discussion, and we're not finalized on it at all yet.
I'm sorry. In terms of, okay, full IDA benefits, sales tax, mortgage tax, pilot. Okay. In terms of the structure, the bond issue would be through the IDA. I don't think it's going to be a tax exempt. It will be a taxable bond. So in essence, the developer has to find its own source of funding. You know, it's not like we're going to give them a check for $115 million. We don't have that money. So they have to provide, as Jeff Hyman has said, a source to buy those bonds.
Why is the pilot so long, 30 years?
That's just been the question. I think the question is the term of the pilot. And again, it's preliminary, Chris. It's again, subject to our approval process. But you know, the project has got an investment of $115 million. That's what the request has been.
Is there anything that we can do to guarantee construction jobs for the residents of Greene County?
Uh,
as I said in my opening remarks, that we make every effort to engage local contractors and subcontractors, and there is some specialty trades that are going to be required to build the water park, and those may not, due to the trade classification, may not come from the area, but we anticipate the most economical use of labor would be to use local county residents, and we would strive to make sure that that occurs.
Before I forget it, Legislator Izzo asked about who would own the infrastructure after it's completed, in particular the sewer plant.
That issue is being dealt with the bond council, so I'm not really sure we've got a final determination on that. But again, generally, if it's a county bond issue, the county has to have an interest in the project.
But it wouldn't be privately owned.
It would not be privately owned.
It's my understanding, we are floating the bond, so it would be owned by the county, but the county's not in the sanitary sewer or water business, so we would look to the township because they have those programs, and we would then enter into an intermunicipal agreement with the township for the operation and the O&M of those facilities.
Going back to the pilot for a second, do we know what the tax revenues of this property would be if there were no pilot? I don't have talking about without the project. I'm project in sight without the pilot.
$10,000
a year. No. Oh, I thought you said,
I'm talking about vacant land.
No. The project. The project as designed, if that's built without a pilot, what would be the tax revenue?
Okay, so the question is...
The question is, what would be the tax impact if the property were fully taxable? That's the question? Okay. That's kind of a hard question because, again, you're adding, in theory, again, if cost is value, I just came out of a two-day trial on what value is, Chris. So cost necessarily isn't value, but assuming that you take the $115 million, your rate is going to go significantly down. We had these discussions numerous times in Athens, so it's kind of hard to project that because $115 million of new base would end up basically changing the landscape. But the other part of this is, you know, again, they're not going to build the project without, you know, a pilot agreement because, again, they can't afford to pay the 4.5%, you know, PISF fee. I have trouble with that word or whatever, but and pay full taxes. I mean, it just, you know, unfortunately, we are in a landscape in New York State. I'm there every day. The taxes are out of control, and they can't afford it in their budget. Because remember, Jeff has to go and sell this to bondholders who are going to raise $115 million. Bondholders want comfort because they're putting up $115 million of risk. They want to know that their taxes aren't going to be consistent or they're not going to come. It's just, you know, it's a different landscape that we live in. I live it every day. I'm trying to build projects every day for people, and it's tough. And without consistency and assurances, that $115 million is not going to migrate into this project. I mean, you guys can talk about it all you want, but that's the reality.
Thank you. Yeah, Forrest Cotton, County Legislator, Kane, Catskill. Probably Paul or Renee. You put figures forward over the full term. Do you have any figures that are represented by 1 year? Sales tax revenue, I think you put $43 million for the whole project. What is it for a year? And the bond issue, what would be the repayment estimate for 1 year?
Well, if I can answer that question, I think I got to pick and pick the other two. We have a
conversation. If you just hold on, I'm going to get to the public.
No, I mean, I can't hear what the public.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'll answer that question. Going into the first full year when debt service is starting to amortize, based on Sean's presentation, debt service would be about $1.4 million. It's level debt service, or essentially level for the next 15 years. In that first year, the estimate of the sales tax collection and user fee equates to $1.9 million. That's based on an 80% H&L feasibility study. So in that first year, there's an estimate of excess cash flow of $438,000. And that increases over time. Just to finish up with the question, again, based on the H&L feasibility study, as you move out in years, the property continues to increase to a stabilized period.
My name is Harry Lennon, minority leader of the legislature. I represent Caro. And my question early on in this this whole process was the area that I represent has numerous resorts, which is 18 miles, 15 miles away from Coxsackie. And I was assured all along in the process that there'll be, there'll be overflow and these resorts will experience some of the profits of the water park. But I go, we have the report here, the Sangre report, but I'd like to hear from the representative from Great Wolf if there is any similar property that you have that would fit in this particular area with all our family-run resorts 18 miles away and on the mountaintop 25 miles away, and what you've seen in the past that showed that those resorts prospered through your development. Not the study, I'd like to hear firsthand if you have anything similar.
That's fine.
Thank you.
Thank you. I think that when you really take a look at our resorts and how we go into the openings and into the communities, the first property that opened was Great Wolf Lodge in the Wisconsin Dells. It was the very first indoor water park. That city has a population of about 1,400 in Lake Delton. Wisconsin Dells is just adjacent to it, has a population of about 2,000. So it's very, very small, surrounded by small communities. And all of the businesses up there are all family-owned businesses. Great Wolf was the first indoor water park. Now there's 18 indoor water park resorts there. So that helped bring people. I think one of the things that you need to think about is it's not really whether you're bringing those dollars just to Great Wolf Lodge, you're bringing those dollars to your community. So if those 400,000 people that come to visit a Great Wolf Lodge each year, if they don't come to our lodge, where are they going? They're still vacationing, but they're not coming to your county. So you take a look at Sandusky, Ohio. We put that was the second property that we opened. And there, it's Cedar Point is right there, family-owned theme park. And they built more rooms. They didn't close, they expanded. So it really depends on really the direction that that independent family wants to go to run their business. Before we came here tonight, we stopped at a nice diner in town. That diner is going to flourish. What was the name of that diner we were into?
Ambrosia.
It was fabulous. That diner is going to flourish because of the people that are coming to Great Wolf Lodge. Because now you've got 400,000 people a year that are coming to your community that before were just driving by. So, am I not answering your question?
I think you hit it right on.
Okay. Ambrosia Diner is in Catskill. And the project is in Coxsackie. That's exactly my question. How is the people, how are they going to get, what would drive them to Catskill, Caro, Round Top? That's my question.
I'd like to just speak to you a little bit from my experience as an economic developer for the last 30 years. The numbers suggest an opportunity is going to be greater. It's indisputable that the numbers suggest an opportunity is going to be created. But Great Wolf isn't going to fulfill that opportunity. It's going to be the local business people, the entrepreneurs, the county, the IDA, its economic development professionals who take advantage of the opportunity that's put in front of you to make this work. If this fails, and it fails for the small businesses here, it's not going to be because whether Great Wolf is successful or not. If they're successful as can be, The opportunity has to be captured by the entrepreneurs and the business people out there who say, how do I get those people to my shop, to my resort, to my store? Grey Wolf is saying today, we want to work with you. We want to cooperate, because if we can raise this as a destination, we'll be more successful. We can be successful on our own, but we don't want to be on our own. We don't want to be a standalone. We want to be part of a destination that thrives. So how do we work together? We're not going to do your work. We can't do that and run a successful business. But we can work together. We can cross-promote. We can figure out strategies the county's going to have based on the numbers I'm looking at. There's going to be some money there that the county can invest in. How do we take advantage of this opportunity? How do we market? How do we grow our tourism attraction program? The opportunity is something that's shared. It comes with the project, but it's incumbent upon the community to take advantage of that opportunity.
Couple more questions. I noticed that the what you want to call the user fee that you'll charge occupancy tax or however you want to call it, that number over the life of the bonds will equate to almost what the county will pay for the infrastructure.
Actually more.
So why would you be using county money if you can collect that money from your guest and pay for the project yourself? You don't have to answer the question now.
That's a very good question. I can answer.
And I guess this is a question on a road maintenance agreement or a sewer maintenance agreement for other individuals who come into the property. Will there be an agreement that will make them pay for part of the infrastructure?
Thank you. That's a very good question. And Jeff, if you want to chime in on how this works from a credit point of view, the revenues that are going to come in from visitation are future revenues. There's no way to guarantee whoever's going to buy a bond that those revenues are going to be there. There's just no way to do it. They're produced over a 30-year period. So the county steps in, uses its good credit to put in place the infrastructure that's needed to create that revenue stream. That revenue stream over time will repay the county for its initial investment. That's the optimum partnership that uses the credit capability of the county, the wherewithal of the project, and the operating staying power of the project to make the project work. It's an excellent question, but it has to do with how do you get it done today when we can't prove that those revenues are going to be here to an investor.
So the risk will be on the county, not on the
board. Risk is shared. $115 million of private money sounds like risk to me. Second question had to do with the subsequent users. That's a decision that the county can make, not us.
Okay,